welcome to whatever madness this show is. This is iDeveloper Live episode final.
Probably. Don't say that. That's a terrible thing to say. I love doing this.
So there we are. Now, I'm not sure if he is here today. We need to find out, is Simon Wolfe around? Because if he is, we need to say a big hello to Simon Wolfe. Roar! There we are. That's Simon. Simon, why are we sounding like a lion for Simon Wolfe? We should be more...
That's the sound of the audience leaving or something.
Now, Simon Wolfe, we need to say, he was due to come to Cocoa Heads and meet with us today, but his car broke down. Do you know, that's really sad, because he was supposed to be giving me a lift, and now I have to drive and I can't have a drink. So, here we are. Simon, be more considerate this time.
That should be like, you know, I don't know, a country song about that. You know, my car wouldn't start, my wife left me, and... I couldn't drink while going to Cocoa Heads or something.
Right, okay, well, there we are. I'm Scotty, just in case you haven't realised. In fact, maybe I shouldn't identify myself. With me, as ever, is the beautiful, and this week, fully clothed, Mr. John Fox.
Hello, world, how are you?
And good, he bent over the laptop just to prove he was fully clothed there. Beautiful pink and lilac, John.
It's springtime here in San Francisco.
And that's the in colors, yes? Pink and lilac.
Absolutely. Yeah. Nothing says thug like pink and lilac. I walk down the street, people are afraid.
I'm sure that's got nothing to do with the sweater. Okay. And this beautiful man on my left, or maybe on the right of the screen, Mr. Matt Long.
Yay. Hello.
Yes, everyone, a big welcome to Matt Long. We can hear the audience in. In fact, here we are. Matt, some people may know who you are, some people don't. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm one of the co-founders and author on Coco's My Girlfriend.
Woo, we love Coco's My Girlfriend.
Yeah. And then I've also co-authored a book on core animation with Addison Wesley. Plus, I'm just kind of... an enthusiast of all things Coco, so that's, I think, a good summary.
And aren't you one of the founders of NS Code Unite in Colorado Springs?
I am.
So you are a real sort of man of the community.
Well, you might say that, yeah.
Good, so if you want to send Matt money, send it via me, and I will ensure that he gets it.
Just some portion of it.
Just remember the exchange rate both ways.
So. Yeah, there we are. John.
So now that we're becoming more like National Public Radio, you know, eventually we'll have all things Coco. We'll have our own coffee mugs or something.
we have iDeveloper. Well, no, they're NS conference coffee mugs with stuff on there. This is absolutely stunning listening for the people on audio at the moment, as they have to hear the sound.
Listen
of me
to you
and
raise
my
your
coffee
cup.
Mug. But there we are. I think. Yeah, maybe some iDeveloper TV coffee mugs in remembrance of the iDeveloper Live demise would be a...
Well, just get the iDeveloper dead mug or something.
We should just have one with a little headstone on saying RIP iDeveloper Live. So we'll go that way. John, you had some news you wanted to share with us this week.
Yes, we wanted to say a big special shout-out and congratulations to our friends at Corellia for shipping Sandvox 2, which goes out tomorrow, the 10th, and they've actually made it. And in the show notes, we will have a little coupon code for any iDeveloper listener that wants to get it at a nice little discount. Comes to you thanks to our friends Dan Wood, who's been on the show a number of times, and Mike Abdullah, who's been on our show a number of times as well. In all honesty, it's hard to ship a 2.0 product. I think it's a great milestone and a very serious congratulations to them.
Yeah, that's a big more round of applause. This is good. With all the time delays, we'll add some in to make it sound as more like more than three of us doing that. It's amazing what you can do with GarageBand these days. Okay, so I mean, John, last year I think it was, wasn't it? We sort of listened week on week about how. Memory Miner 2 was coming soon, and it just kept getting a little bit more delayed and a little bit more delayed and a little bit more delayed through things. You know, so just for those out there who are still, you know, in that sort of the throes of, you know, the joy of the 1.0 and the 1.1, what is the pain? You know, what is it about 2.0 that causes such pain?
Well, Elvis Costello once said something about how you have your entire lifetime to create your first album and then, you know, 10 months or a year or whatever to come up with your second one. And I think it's somewhat similar in software. You know, you have all these great imaginations and ideas and plans and dreams and hopes and love for your software baby, and you ship it. And then, you know, then you've got to run a business. And it's a very difficult balancing act because you have to take care of current customers. You've got a lot of day-to-day things that are going on. And you are also, you know, running into this problem of having to, you know, keep your users engaged and make little improvements here and there, but not so many that, you know, you're perpetually giving away, you know, your upgrade revenue. And that's something we've discussed a lot, but it's really that. It's the fact that the dream hits reality with 1.0, and then it's a long, hard slog to get your 2.0 out.
Matt, you ever been able to ship a 2.0 product?
Well, most of my products are iOS products, and they haven't hit 2.0 yet, but certainly we've done some significant point releases, and it is a challenge.
Yeah. See, I'm still trying to get 1.0. Yeah. I keep doing stupid things like podcasts and video training and whatever else, which doesn't help. Okay, let's have a quick review in the chat room. Who in the chat room has actually released a 2.0? You see, I should give them some room there, yeah. to just start answering back there. We'll give them a little bit of time. So I guess, I mean, there's another significant 2.0, which is coming along soon, which is why our Cocoa Fusion friends aren't with us. But it's, you know, what defines a 2.0 for you, John? I mean, we released 1.1s, 1.2s, you know, 1.11s or whatever. You know, what, in your mind, what is it that says to you, this is what I'm going for in a 2.0?
I think it's got to show two things. It's got to show that you've really listened deeply to your first batch of users. You know, typically first releases of software can be a little bit either rough. Hopefully they're not rough around the edges, but they you may not have done everything that you'd had a vision for. I mean, I don't know, as Will Shipley or someone else says, you know, you might want to think about all the way to 3.0, but release your 1.0, you know? And so you never get to ship everything you want to. So, you know, part of it is kind of a making good on your vision. But the other thing too is that no matter how great your vision is, until you ship software and have a critical mass of actual users, not enthusiastic early adopter beta testers, but actual users that don't really have any type of investment in it, you know, your software has to prove that it can live or die by ordinary folks, you know, breaking out their wallet and using it and being satisfied or not. So it's those two things. And I think if you show those two things, then you've got a real 2.0.
Okay, I forgot to turn the phone off before we started recording, so just ignore that in the background. It's probably my agent offering me another Hollywood movie.
Now let's talk about the things that make up a professional podcast host. Matt, what would you look for if you were on a professional podcast?
Sorry, he couldn't hear,
over the noise.
Over the side of the motorbike out of one window and the phone in the corner.
I'd say, Scotty,
it's a soundproof room, maybe that would be good, without a phone in it.
It's time to stop sampling, you know, the clip audio things that you've been trying to add to the show and pay some real money for professionally produced clip audio.
No. Why use a sample when I can pay a man to drive up and down outside on his motorbike? It's the only way. Right. Okay. Someone in here says in the chat room is saying that iOS 2.0s often aren't as difficult because basically, an iOS application often has a far smaller scope.
Yeah, it's
you
a
know, fewer point. Features. So if you've got an iOS app that's got two main features and then you ship it with three main features, then suddenly you have a 2.0.
Right.
Do you agree with that statement?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's the point about scope is actually, I think, dead on. Just iOS apps are much more finite than you get with, you know, large enterprise applications you have to build for whole teams or whatever. So yeah, I can definitely see how adding just another feature would be enough to rev up the version.
I've heard a lot of people compare applications, you know, iOS applications to songs. I mean, nobody think, you know, where's version 2.0 of I don't know, name your favorite classic rock song. And it's not a thing. I mean, I don't know. I think it's more, I think the 2.0 application for an iOS developer is just merely another app. You know, it's that in the same way that the 2.0 song for an artist is another album. know what I'm saying? I think it's just a different. I just don't see that you can keep building on something that is by its definition so tight in scope.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, basically, maybe iOS is about releasing a whole bunch of 1.0s. and again, it's a cycle, isn't it? That iOS 2.0 has come along a lot quicker. I guess it's far more. It seems far more acceptable in the iOS world as well to release an app at 1.0 then never touch it again. Have it die or live or die just by its initial feature set and go off and do something different. Whereas most people releasing a 1.0 Mac app I'm having to release now because I'm forced to release now, but actually I've still got 1,000 things I would love to do in it. Going out there. I mean, I've got a colleague who lives here in Silicon Valley, Tetbury. he's one of the other thousands of developers in the area, who has a fairly well-established application on the App Store, accounting software, a different iPad and iPhone versions. And he's sort of sitting down now and for the last month really been starting to write the Mac app, and he's sort of just going, even though he's got loads of common code coming in from behind the scenes and the processing of the data, he's still saying, the Mac version is just a far, far bigger project.
Doubtless. There was a comment I thought was very good. iOS 2.0 is maybe a refinement of 1.0 doing it right. And I think that's true. I mean, isn't that the other thing that people say, is that something is done not when you've run out of things to add, but when you run out of things to take away. And I would say that's true, and particularly for iOS. And that's the challenge that you have, is you can imagine, you can intuit if something is done, but you really don't know until people have used it, and then you just have to just be a keen observer and keep trying to see your software with fresh eyes.
Right. Okay. So, with that said, we're talking about having developed 1.0s on iOS and on Mac OS X. This is a good time to. This is a really cruddy link, but we're doing it anyway. in fact, it's not even the link at all. Now I've interrupted it, it's even worse. WWDC. Okay. iOS, OS X, moving closer together. Yes or no?
As they say in Germany, nine.
Your grasp of the international scene, John, is stunning and amazing. I'm sure Uli Kostura will praise you and comment on your knowledge of the German language and the German culture.
I'm gonna interpret that sign that he's put in the chat room as that. It's like, it looks like his hands up as if he's having revelation or something.
No, he's just grateful someone's mentioned Germany at last. Without mentioning the war, of course. Oh, yeah. But there we go. Moving on. I mean, Matt, do you think this whole idea that people are saying that iOS and OS X need to move closer together? In fact, what they're saying is OS X needs to move closer to iOS. Do you see that personally as a way forward? Do you like to see things go, or do you want to see a complete separation, because actually it's what's best for each platform?
Yeah, I mean, I can only speak for me. I think the whole Chameleon project these guys were working on and has now kind of been forked on GitHub and whatnot is showing that people have an interest of being able to do what Chameleon kind of promised. I think the whole, just the phrase Apple was using, back to the Mac, sort of teases us and makes us think we're going to get UIKit type stuff back on the Mac. And I think that would be a great move. Just the way they've done things, they kind of learned, it seems to me, from anything they've done up until iOS and incorporated all that into iOS. So we really have some powerful tools there that I'd love to see on the Mac side.
I mean, I often hear a lot of developers saying, to develop for iOS is a lot easier than it is for Mac.
Right.
They use that word. It's a simpler. Is it simpler because iOS is just better designed, or is it simpler just because actually the limitations of the device mean it can't be overly complex, and that's why it's easier?
I mean, I think the complexity is still there as far as, you know, I mean, it's just a huge SDK. There's, you know, just about everything you could think of is available. Well, there are exceptions to that, but really, as far as the ease of use, I think a lot of that does come from just a great design.
Yeah, I would echo that. I think certainly there are some, I mean, you can argue that there are some classes are just better designed. They've had more time to do it. They didn't have to design it within limitations of hardware from that dating back to the, you know, the late 80s, early 90s. But I think it's more of the case that it's purposely a simpler device. I mean, you know, iPad introduced the concept of a window, but it's not, you know, kind of not really. I mean, when you have something, it's just where you have no choice but to focus on one thing because the user can only really see and interact with one thing and don't have the distractions of multiple windows and figure out which is the active menu attached to which window and all those other things that tend to trip human beings up when they're using software. When all that disappears, then a lot of the complexity disappears.
Sure, yeah.
And I think that it's kind of I don't know if to say it's painful, but it is definitely a weird feeling moving back and forth between iOS and macOS. You know, after a while, you think, oh, it's great; it should be fluid to move between the two. But there is definitely a different mindset, and there are certain things that trip you up when you say, oh, I'm used to doing it this way on, you know, OS one OS versus the other.
I guess maybe we'll see some stuff with. Where some of the controls become closer, things like handling table view cells and stuff like
right,
that.
Right, exactly.
Is, you know,
that's a big one.
You know, however, you know, we don't have. It amazes me that we, you know, we see it simpler. Yet we don't have bindings on iOS. Right. We don't have garbage collection. But actually, because there's things like you know, table view cells and be able to reuse them, some of the stuff is actually, well, that's far nicer than having to deal with all the crud that we have to deal with on OS X. So, you know, beginning to bring some of these technologies together, maybe it's that people like, as opposed to, because a lot of the messing around in OS X is actually doing stuff we shouldn't really be having to do anymore.
Agreed.
So Bertrand, get on it. Oh, but he's left. Now who took over for him? I forgot.
The other guy. But I guess people will get their first introduction to him at WWDC in the State of the Union.
Mm. That's right.
Yeah, for those of you that have tickets.
Yeah, so Scotty, did you get a ticket?
No, I haven't got a ticket. I just want to point out
Matt, did you get a ticket?
Everyone watching the video.
Yes,
Matt,
I did.
Matt is not as tall as he looks, and I'm not as short as I look. I've just led back in a very relaxed style.
Oh, Scotty, come on.
There we go. Okay, and so there we are. He's, Matt is actually a midget. Ian just put very close to the camera. This way here. Right, okay. I think we need to talk core animation.
All right.
Because that's something you know about. Matt is here in the UK, the center of all iOS and OS X video training. We are filming, we started filming today a course on core animation. We had a fairly good day. I'd say we got 4 minutes of material done today, probably.
He never did respond to us when you asked. How long was that? So are you sure it's 4 minutes?
It may be three.
Okay.
So there we are. But by the end of the week, hopefully there will be more.
There will be.
So, John, do you use Core Animation in Memory Miner?
I do. I use it a fair amount, and I also used it a lot in my consulting. And actually, was doing a core animation project for iPad this past week, and I ran into some questions. And I wish that I had a core animation guru to whom I could address my questions.
Right. Well. Okay. Well, we're going to let Matt do a little bit of an introduction to core animation, just in case someone out there doesn't know what it is. And then we will let you ask him those questions, and then we'll find you that guru. I'm sorry, I'm so insulting, I do apologize.
I'm a midget, I don't know what I'm talking about. What's going on here?
I just make people feel so at home. I'm happy to leave you. Leave. Okay. Core animation. I mean, it's interesting, you've just been doing a core animation project, John. I mean, I'm struggling to remember what life was like before core animation. It seems to have invaded everything. I mean, when did core animation arrive? I can't remember. Was it 10.4, 10.5?
5, yeah, 10.5? Leopard was core animation, yep.
So that's not long ago, really.
Nope.
And yet, you know, apps that don't use it can be seen as, you know, fairly behind the times and dull.
Yep.
And apps that overuse it are seen as obnoxious.
Yeah, that's fairly easy to do.
So tell us a little bit about CoreAnimation. Just give us the 30-second rundown of what it even is.
Okay. Well, basically, it is just one of Apple's frameworks that allows you to animate really any kind of view, or more specifically, the layers that view contains. And it allows you – it's not just for animating, not just for motion, though that is a large part of it. It also allows you to really adorn your views in certain ways. You can give it different colors, different visual attributes, you know, rounded corners, borders, and you can use gradients, you can use shadows, different types of layers support those kind of things. So really, it is a way to, I think, you know, for apps that aren't games, like games, I think, are kind of their own category. So sometimes people will write a game, a 2D game, using CoreAnimation exclusively, but I kind of see that as its own thing, where you also have people just building normal utility type apps, for example, or just maybe their own you know, completely built from the ground up, designed app, you know, where they want to draw the user's attention somehow with visual cues and whatnot. You know, if, just as an example, you take the icons in the home screen on the iPhone, you know, and when you tap and hold one of those, it starts to wiggle back and forth. You know, that's an animation that you probably don't even notice
as a
user.
That's a good impression,
John. Yes, yeah, exactly. Just like that. Everybody go like this. But anyhow, basically that gives your user some understanding, some idea of what's going on without actually having to communicate that, you know, with words or whatever. So it's very powerful.
So, I mean, you've just pointed out there, and CoreAnimation is available on OS X and on the iPhone. I mean, is it one of those technologies, say, for example, a little bit like CoreData, where it really is the same, you know, it's the same thing on the two, with just a few tweaks here and there, or are they fundamentally different between the two platforms?
So I wouldn't say they're fundamentally different. I think really down at the lower levels, where you're actually working with layers directly, creating your own explicit animations as opposed to implicit animations, everything pretty much stays the same. But there are certain components to more of the implicit animations where they vary a little bit. For example, you can animate a view within an OS X window by using the proxy object, but you actually have to turn on CoreAnimation by setting the set once layer call on that view to actually tell it to be layer backed. Where on iOS, it's layer backed by default. Everything has at least one root layer. So there's just some nuanced things there, some minor differences that, you know, they're pretty simple to get a hold of, but you would need to know about them. You might have some issues if you move between the two platforms if you weren't aware of those. Colors is another one that comes to mind. You're using NS Color versus UI Color between the two, and they're not really compatible. And coordinates using, yeah, like a NS point versus a CG point. Yeah,
that you have the origin in the top left versus the bottom left.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
It tripped me up a lot that you have to – that
exactly.
Because I actually did work on something where I was trying to get this flipping animation layer to have one bit of code that could work on both, and I pretty much gave up with the idea. It was as you were saying, you can make the layer be the same on both sides, but if you use delegate drawing, then you have to, you know, on Mac you draw using, you know, NS Bezier path and you know, different on a UI Bezier path on iOS, for example.
But that's not CoreAnimation being different. That's the drawing system being different that CoreAnimation has to use. The actual way you animate is still the same. It's you just, sure. You know, it will animate between two points. The fact that those points are different on, you know, on the two different systems is not CoreAnimation's fault. That's the UI.
Right, but are you saying that you would need to basically, because you can return in the in a view on OS X, you can return the is flipped flag there to say yes, so that it would flip the coordinate system. So in that case, I think you probably could keep a lot of the code the same, but you would want to do it on the iOS side first, then move it over, turn on is flipped, and at least theoretically, I think that would work. I haven't actually done it, but I think that would work.
Guru tip number one.
There we go. It's been worth listening to the rest of this show.
Well, but I think that the other thing too, with like drawing, because for instance, what I was trying to do is like, okay, well, I have some rounded corners and the type of things that you want a Bezier path to do. And so there's not a cross-platform Bezier path class. You either drop down and use CG path on both, or you if def, or what would you do? I mean, that's the thing. If you're doing that type of custom drawing.
Right. Yeah, there's certainly enough differences where you really do need to kind of figure those out before. Well, preferably before. I guess you can learn it in the middle, too. Yeah. Kind of the hard way.
See, I mean, one of the things that I think we've sort of is coming obvious as we've been preparing this course, and maybe when you're writing your book, is actually, you know, the heart of core animation is incredibly simple, isn't it? You can get the basics of core animation really, really quickly.
Yep.
Then all the sort of, you know, extra stuff that means it was worth writing a book on, worth making a course on, is just, it's sort of, did you know this around the sides, or are you aware of this, or whatever else? But the actual fundamental techniques of creating an animation, you know, creating a path, creating an animation, applying it to the layer, it's just actually, I mean, it's not a lot more complex than I've just said.
Right. Yeah, I think there's, you know, there's a lot of different things that you learn as you go, and one of the key things that I've seen is that the more I use it, the more I think of other uses for it, other places where it would make sense to use core animation. And, you know, you look at on the OS X side, we have core image, so you can do filtering and all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of effects you can apply. But now that we have – I mean, we've had it for a while now, but now that we have things like shadows available on the layers in core animation on iOS, you can really do a lot with that as well. You can really, you know, give it different effects, more depth types of effects. Obviously, it's not the same. You can't just say add a ripple effect like you can with core image on the OS X side, but it's getting there. We're getting more and more from that. So it really does kind of emerge as a great solution for a lot of different UI problems and UX problems too.
So lots of us, when we think of core animation, are thinking of making something move around the screen, you know, a circle, a square.
Right.
You know, depending on what your application is.
Yeah.
Or which demo code you're running. But you know, as we said, it's used for a lot more. I mean, John, what did you use core animation for in MemoryMiner? Give us an example.
Well, the whole pan and zoom stuff for the photographs is all core animation. That's in that replaced a bunch of ugly, not really well working OpenGL code beforehand. So
That's cool.
And, you know, core animation is definitely, it's like one of those technologies where you think if you're going to do something very, very simple and you look at all the sample code and you want to, you know, it can be very easy. When you start to have multiple things going on and you have this type of dance of things that you need to coordinate, that's when it becomes a little bit trickier. With implementing all the delegate methods for like animation did stop and keeping track of which layers stopped and that type of thing. The biggest trouble I've ever had with core animation is pausing things. In fact, I think I may have even asked you and Marcus about it at NS conference in Atlanta.
Oh, where, okay.
You know, trying to get to the presentation layer, because if you've got
right. You
know, multiple layers animating and you want to pause them, you know, it's kind of like bindings, where there are some things happening in the background that you may not be aware of, and you know, you kind of say, well, you know, I want to pause my if you want to pause an animation, you have to figure out, well, what's the state of each of the different layers. And then when you're trying to figure out, well, okay, what is that state, I didn't know intuitively, and it wouldn't have been obvious to me that you'd have to ask its presentation layer. Who knew what a presentation layer? Those are a lot of the advanced things for which you need a book,
yeah,
or a course.
Right.
There we are. Make a note that we need to cover that sort of stuff. So, John, anything you can tell us about this core animation project you've been working on? I mean, what's your challenge been there, or is this all under NDA and secret?
No, I think I can talk about it. It's the company that I'm doing consulting work for right now does a lot of second screen applications, where you have something like a Blu-ray disc or a video stream, and you want to provide some type of activity that's going on the second screen, which in this case would be an iPad. And so I was working on something that was flipping, you know, an object off of the screen of the iPad to then have it appear on the main screen, you know, the Blu-ray application. And in that particular case, it requires, you know, sending a message through a sync server saying, hey, I've flipped an animation. I flipped an object with ID XYZ. You know, now please please do your part on your side. And then you have to kind of coordinate when does something disappear. When something disappears off the iPad screen, then it has to appear on the main screen. When it disappears on that, you need a message back to say, okay, now you can kind of return that object and let the person kind of quote unquote reload. And I run into a problem that I didn't have a chance to fix because I had to get it ready for a quick demo, and I'm have to work on it this week. You have this animation did stop delegate method. So you add an animation to a layer, and then when the delegate will give you back the animation, and then you have to figure out which layer is. So from what I've understood, the typical thing you do is like, well, okay, you ask if the animation is equal to the animation for key path of your layer, right? And then you say, well, if that's the one, then you know that you've got a hit, so to speak, or a match.
Right.
And sometimes, and I could not figure this out, and this has stumped me, where I would log the object, I would log the animation object and log the layer that it's working with, and it's not the same one.
Oh.
So, and that was driving me nuts. I don't know. So is this like another thing where it's where the layer that you would get back, or, you know, what it would have been really nice, and maybe I'm just missing something obvious, for me to be able to say, I want to add some arbitrary value to the animation, you know, in the same way that sometimes you have delegate methods where you can say have user info, where you give it some object of any sort to be able to identify which object is being referenced in the delegate method that gets sent. Does that make sense what I'm asking about?
Not completely. I'm not okay. Sure. Sorry. I heard a lot of things there. I wasn't sure exactly what your specific question
is. Well, it's basically how do you reference a layer so that when your animation did stop,
delegate method
gets called, you know which one it is.
Yeah, usually, I mean, it does allow arbitrary key values in the layer so that you can include that, or actually you can do it on the animation itself because that's what you get back.
Right. Well, that's what I was asking for. Okay. So then that maybe I missed that and I didn't read through the documentation because how do you do it? You just call set value for key with any object on the animation object that you create?
Yeah, I have done it that way. Yeah.
I'm not
necessarily saying that's the best way, but I've definitely done it that way. So, and it seems to work. So yeah, when I get the animation back in the animation did stop finished call, I can then say value for key and I just name it layer and it gives me that back and I can identify it then. I can make sure it's the one I was looking for.
Then I will just have to stop trying to do things the hard way.
Yeah.
Why?
Easy way and best way are not always
smack it with a hammer.
Yeah. But the easy way and best way are not always the same. So,
well, I mean, here's the thing that's in general. I think that and this, you know, Apple ships lots of demonstration code, and some of it can be really great, and some of it, honestly, can be very bad.
Exactly.
And I think when you're learning new technology and you're looking for examples, the best favor you can do for yourself is make sure that the source of your demo code is worth copying, because if you're working with multiple technologies, especially if you're under deadline, it really helps to have a trusted source of quality code to work with.
Indeed.
So,
yeah. In fact, I had that happen on a project just recently, and there was some. It was actually some XML parsing demo code that somebody had used in a project that I inherited, and it was spitting out all these console messages, and didn't know why. And so I went and looked it up. Someone had an answer on Stack Overflow, but it didn't actually solve the problem. So I went and solved the problem. First thing I did was track down where the source code came from, and it was from an Apple demo project. So I was like, you sort of have this assumption sometimes that they're going to write, you know, really pristine, you know, very helpful code, but that isn't always the case. So
no.
Well, the rumor is, isn't it, that a lot of the demo code is written by the interns? And so I guess,
right. That would explain it, right?
Like the project templates.
That's right.
So, go ahead, John. Go ahead.
Well, that definitely answers my question. So I would just will have to do that. But you know, maybe I'm just dull and stupid and didn't see it. But that would be a great thing, because if it is a common thing to do, it would make a life so much easier. Right. You know, that to make it very clear, here's a good way to do it, because it is a common problem.
It is.
Since you can't get the layer from an animation, I guess the reason why is because it may not be the same layer. You add an animation to a layer, but the animation may operate on your layer's presentation layer or whatever kind of proxy layer that behind the scenes core animation is adding and creating on for you, right?
Yeah.
So the only safe way to do it is to have some type of identifier and then put it on the animation, because the animation object will be the same, right? If you create one that has to be the animation that is referenced in animation did stop.
Right.
Word.
Yeah. Right? I mean, when I first started working on some of this stuff, that was one of the first properties I looked for in an animation, was the layer that it belonged to. Now, I realize it could probably be added to multiple. I don't think I've ever tried that. You could possibly add the same one to multiple layers so that it could come back with a different result there. I'm not sure. I'd have to look at that. I'd have to figure that one out. But anyhow, that was kind of a surprise to me. I thought for sure, well, if you're giving me the animation and the animation did stop, I should know what layer it's associated with, shouldn't I? So
absolutely. Well, I'm glad I'm not the only one who had this foolish assumption.
Yeah.
So now, can I ask another question, Mr. Core Animation Guru?
Who's he talking?
Core Animation Guru? John, I'm going to defer this one over to my friend. I feel I've answered enough now.
So this is something that trips me up a lot, because you know a very common use of core animation is to animate an image, right? So you create a layer and you add an image to it, you set it as its contents. And for some of and I've gotten into the habit, good, bad, or indifferent, of just basically using delegate methods for doing my drawing. Sometimes it's because you really have to be able to do that, to do kind of more complicated drawing. But sometimes I end up doing it when I think I shouldn't have to. It should be very simple. I create my layer and I set its contents and I set needs display, and it never draws. And I can't figure out why. And kind of it's like one of those things where you're working on a project and you're under deadline, it's not working, and you think, okay, I can spend 4, 5, 10 minutes trying to figure out why, but if I don't and I know that there's another way I can fall back to making it work, then I have to. But it's left me scratching my head. Is it something about – I think I'd seen somewhere where you have to be careful about when you create your layers and add content to make sure that they're ready to receive content to draw. Is that the case?
Yeah, I think you need to kind of decide what route you're going to go. So if you're and stick with that, if you're going to do the actual drawing yourself, then I don't, and you want to set the contents. And in fact, at that point, you might want to just override the draw layer in context or whatever.
Well, that's what I end up doing, right?
That's what you end up doing. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So I think if you're going to just set contents, I think you need to have an image ready to go. It needs to be finished at that point, with no more drawing to come. I'm don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure that's the way you'd have to do it. Your CG image ref ready to go, set contents, and that's all you do with it.
Well, I've done that, but that's not the problem. It's not that I'm trying to do more drawing. I mean, I understand for performance reasons that it tries to draw as infrequent as possible. I'm talking about a case where I create a layer, I set the contents of it, I'm setting it with an image that I believe is loaded, instance, a UI image name, so it's coming from the wrapper. It's not like it's downloading from the internet, and I can log it, and I can see the properties of the image and saying, yes, the pixels are really there. They just never draw to begin with.
Okay.
And I can never figure out why. For delegate drawing, it trips some people up. It certainly did me, where, if you make a change, if you call set needs display, that will force – it will do the draw layer in context after you've done it.
Right.
But when you're not doing delegate drawing, you set the content, you expect it to display. And if it doesn't – you're left wondering, well, what's going on?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I don't think of it as a common problem, because I haven't run into it myself, so I'd have to look at the specific code you're working with to see if there's something, that we could track down. But yeah, because that doesn't sound like something I've really dealt with.
Hmm. All right.
Okay, Mr. Guru, we have another question in the chat room. Uli Kostura says, I'd be curious about transition effects, i.e. you have a view and another view and you want to transition between them with a wipe or so, even any custom effect. Any suggestions?
I've looked at this concept myself in the past, and it's really Because you know, you can obviously just do your own action and then respond by making a transition on your own, you know, just kind of hard coding a transition. But I think what he means is, you know, if you want to actually make a change to some property or whatever to trigger a default animation, is that, am I understanding that correctly? Does that sound like what, let me just read his question again. Yeah, to transition between them to, with a wipe or so, or a custom effect. Yeah, so there's a couple of different – let me look this up here because I have it in my Evernote journal. Let's see here.
So you use Evernote as a code snippet sample
database? I do, yeah.
Database.
Yep. Let me just see here.
That's an interesting point. John, do you keep libraries of code that you've done around before in places where you can reference it and find them again, or do you more keep them in projects and go look for them?
I have kind of text files, little, you know, code snippet text files, and it's very unorganized. Doesn't Pilkey also make a product for doing this? Code Collector? No? Isn't that what that does?
And Code Collector Pro.
Yeah, a lot of times I have a lot of notes surrounding it. So, you know, this is more for, you know, working on updates to the book and that kind of thing. So I can just kind of, you know, put all my thoughts there along with code snippets, which works pretty well.
Yeah, there's no Code Collector Pro client for Windows Mobile, I don't think, but Evernote does have.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure affected your decision of tool that you use.
Yeah, Windows? What's that? What are you talking about? Well, so in answer to the question, you know, really each layer has a actions array, and those kind of define, you know, what actions should be performed depending on which event is being triggered there. So there's a list of them, and I don't think I have a comprehensive list, but if you were to change you know, the contents or the sublayers, you can actually pass in a dictionary to this, well, yeah, I guess that's what it is, a dictionary to this actions property of a layer. You can set your actions field to be your own NS mutable dictionary or NS dictionary. And in there you specify for each one of these what animation you want it to use based on whichever one of these properties you're animating. So you could set the sublayers property, you could set the contents. You just associate an animation with those in that actions dictionary. And then whenever those values get changed at that layer level, you should see that animation used instead of the default one. It's also a way you can get rid of all of your default animations. So if you don't want any kind of crossfade or whatever to happen automatically, you can blank all those out. Of course, there's an easier way to do that rather than just building up a blank dictionary. you can just turn the actions off. I forget the exact method. There's a specific method they added, disable actions or something to that effect. I'll look it up and I can give it to Scotty to put in the show notes.
That will get published eventually. In the moment, we're just grateful if the show goes out, let alone if the show notes get there. John, did anyone read your blog post? Because I forgot to post the show notes again.
No, but here's the thing, you know, we can measure the power of a Scotty tweet, because you had tweeted, you know, there was the image that I took of this guy sitting on top of three cans of Red Bull at NS conference, and you said that it summed up for you the conference, and I, you know, it was like a micro fireballing is when Scotty tweets something. And I would love to know what the awesome power of iDeveloper Live show notes are, but I just haven't experienced them.
I will let you experience the awesome power of the show notes soon, John. I think you'll find that the awesome power is not as awesome as you think it is.
So it's merely awesome. It's not like, you know, Danny Gregg awesome.
Yeah, I think it's limp. Maybe the word that you will decide to use to describe it. Okay, I think we can someone's curious about how much one can animate Windows on a Mac.
I'm different kind about, of Windows. Yeah they don't mean the Windows that things Microsoft. Appear in,
not, you know, can you take a copy of VMware and make animate it away, that sort of thing.
So yeah, this is a little trickier, and I wrote a blog post on it a while back.
Oh, that's my iPhone 5 prototype ringing.
It's sad.
What is this Muppet ringtone that you have?
Well, I need to tell you a story, John. I broke my iPhone recently.
By sitting on it.
I sat on it. There's the results. It's both broken. So I ordered a new screen and LCD and digitizer, which arrived. But then it broke. So that's now sat in this bag waiting to go back. So that's what my iPhone currently looks like. It's the touch interface is a little narrow. So I managed to get my hands on a prototype iPhone 5 to keep me going until then, which looks like that. Very similar. I borrowed this
8-bit iPhone.
It's a Nokia 3220, just for those on the audio feed. This one was purchased in 2002 by a friend of mine, and it's absolutely in immaculate condition. He'd had it for, 10 years? I'd had it for 14 hours, and I dropped it down the toilet.
Gross, and you're holding it?
No. So that spent the last 3 days sat in this, which is a box of quick cook rice, to dry out, and now it's working again.
So are you going to be cooking that
rice? Remind me not to come
later.
And now tonight is risotto for tea.
I'm out.
Matt's coming round.
Oh my god. Oh, delicious chocolate curry.
Anyway, Matt, how much can you animate Windows on a Mac?
Oh boy! Well, I'll post this in, or can we post comment, or I'm sorry, URLs in?
Yeah, let me just check that's enabled, but we'll make sure that you can post a URL in the chat room, and those, you can, and those that are online can follow that, and we will try and remember to put the link in the show notes. Well, the links will always go to the show notes, just whether I publish the show notes or not is the difference.
Yeah. Well, so this is my last time, which was 2008, that I really messed around with this. So things may have changed since then. In fact, it seems quite possible, maybe likely. But that blog post is one I wrote way back when that kind of shows how to shake the window, similar to how you get a window shake if you type in the wrong password on OS X. We just kind of mimic the same functionality and posted it out there. So, which is actually again, similar to what we were talking about earlier, related to what we were talking about earlier. It's a lot easier to shake a window or a view, for that matter, on iOS than it is on the desktop side. So, the code's a lot simpler. But take a look. Highlight that link.
Now, Pearl Muncher, is that really your handle?
It is, yes.
That's good.
Yes, I spent many years writing Perl code, and that's where that came from. So that's me.
All right, so I think maybe another question people might have is, when to do view animation on iOS versus layer animation?
Yeah, it is actually a pretty common question. I think that my rule of thumb, the key for me has been, if you're going to be needing user interaction, stick with UI views, because you've already got all that stuff built into it. Where if you go with layers, you're going to have to hit test on everything, and it gets a little more complicated. So it's just sort of baked into a UI view, and it makes it a lot simpler. And because UI views have very little, if any, more overhead than a layer, there's really kind of no reason to not use a view in that case. Where I tend to choose layers is when you're building something that doesn't require user interaction, but it also will be something that you want to build up for the look of it or something to that effect. You really want to adorn it with some effect or something like that. Again, oftentimes that's going to turn up more commonly in games, I think, where you're actually creating sprites and whatnot, if you're rolling your own. But again, even then, I would probably recommend people writing 2D games might use Cocos 2D, something like that. It gives you a full framework, including the use of physics engine and that kind of thing. So those are kind of my rules of thumb. I'll use Core Animation layers a lot, but most of the time, it's really just I'm working on the root layer of a view. I'd say probably the majority of the time for me, at least.
Should I ask my question while we do have no audio? Because I have another follow-up.
No, I think we may have audio back.
Okay. Oh, okay.
So, you know, you touched on something earlier. You said that, you know, one reason people use, it's hard to separate core animation from core from layers, right? I mean, you use layers, you can set properties on them. It's the way to do background colors, rounded corners, all that kind of stuff. So whether you animate them or not, you might use, these techniques for drawing things. But where I get tripped up is combining, you know, what would be controls with layers, right? So
right.
And I think that's a particular case with text. You know, I was working on something where I said, okay, I really do want to be able to use a CA layer and put an image in it so I could have the round corners, have the shadow effects, have the complete control I have over the drawing it, and use the delegate method to be able to scale and position the images and do the types of things that aren't maybe so easy to do with a bog standard UI image view. But on my same view that hosts all these layers, I want to be able to have text, and it's pretty easy to work with a UI text view or a UI label. And there I've run into problems with, I guess, maybe it's Z-level ordering or something, where I find it tricky to combine the two, where I might have something and I have a view, it has some layers in it, and then on the view I add, I add a subview, which may be a label, and the label gets drawn behind my animations, my layers, if I animate them. Is that something you've heard of before? Is that
I mean, my first thought is to look at using a CA text layer.
Well, that's what I ended up doing. So okay. I mean, that's the thing. It seems like you have to go all in. Like, it's very hard.
Yeah.
On the Mac, it is. You can run into similar problems of combining, but you know any view can be. You can say set once layer, and it seems to do the right thing, right? If you set once layer, then it adds it to the layer tree of the view that's its parent, and it doesn't seem very easy to do that type of thing on iOS.
I mean, the next thought I have there is to really take the UI views themselves and start adding those as sublayers to each other, and then only change properties of layers of views that actually need to be changed. So if you wanted to, you know, have an image view, have it contain a text view as a child, which I think that works, then you could still go into the root layer of the image view and round the corners and, you know, give it a border width or whatever you wanted. And it seems like it ought to do this, like you said, do the right thing at that point. But you know, I'm speaking hypothetically at this point.
Yeah. But see, yeah, that's the thing where you start working on these things and you're not an expert on it. You think, well, is there a right way to do it? And that
right.
that's again the argument of really high quality sample code that are real world examples of things that, you know, if you have the permission to do it or you can invent them yourselves, it makes a huge difference to people. But I think that's not an uncommon thing where you want something kind of like, you know, where you have like what looks like a slide, right? So you, and this is something I've worked on where you can have a containing view, which, and you have a view controller for it, and you want to be able to set a model object on that view controller saying, you know, here's your object that contains a URL for the image and a title and a bit of text and all that kind of stuff. And so then you want to be able to have the view controller set the properties of the layers or set the text set the string in the UI labels or whatever, do all those different things. And that's where it becomes a little bit tricky about figuring out where you want to do your configuration and drawing, and that's right. The hybrid stuff is a little bit tricky.
Yeah.
And because, you know, and there, you know, obviously you can't do selection on a CA text layer, but sometimes if you present some text to a user, a lot of times they're going to say, well, I want to be able to select and copy this.
Right.
And that's where it's where it really becomes tricky.
Definitely.
I think we've done quite well with some quite good questions. Well done, John.
Thank you.
I don't think I'll bother turning up next week.
Mm.
I've just sat here like a stuffed prune.
Well, you provided the very useful insult services. You're like Triumph the insult dog.
And I did demo the iPhone 5.
That's true.
Yes, so there we are.
And it fell in the toilet, so the insult dog thing applies. Yeah,
for me to poop on. I'm
going
to for me to serve dinner.
Remind me to wash my hands.
Remind me to bleach my mind.
Okay. Well, we've been running for getting on for an hour now, maybe just slightly over because of a few problems at the start. I'm not sure where we are. So, unless, John, you have any burning final questions, or you have any, Matt, any burning final things that you just would feel totally bad if you hadn't shared before we go on Coronation?
Nope. I don't think so.
Well, Matt, if I want to read more of your scintillating writings, where would I find them?
Well, the Coco's My Girlfriend blog, of course, CIMGF.com. And we're a little behind where we used to. We used to publish two posts a week. Now it's two posts a year, apparently. No, it's not quite that bad, but it's getting there. But you know, we've gotten some guests to come and post there as well. So trying to keep the content up to date. And then, of course, the book from Addison Wesley. It's called Coronation. Just look it up on Amazon. It's the pink one. There is another Coronation book, you know. So
one of the few books printed in full color.
Full color, yeah. The source code's all in Xcode, syntax highlighting colors. So.
Right, that's great. But John, you jumped the gun there because I'm introducing a new section to iDeveloper Live. People in the chat room are getting worried. This really is the last iDeveloper Live. Don't worry, folks. It's like a hangover. You say never again, but you get up and you do it again anyway.
The pain of childbirth.
Yeah, well, that's easy. And compared to putting this show out, that's what I tell my wife anyway. I want to introduce a new section just for the next couple of weeks, because it becomes pointless after that, called WWDC Top Tip. No, I don't have any music for it, so I'll make some up. Top Tip. Okay, let's... John, this is you. You don't have to do anything once. Give us your WWDC Top Tip. I think I know what it's going to be, but give it to anyway.
Go out and leave Moscone and eat something tasty.
Oh, that's not what I thought you were going to say, but there we are.
Yeah, okay. You thought I was going to say, make sure you come up with a very simple sample application for use in the labs.
I'm not laughing at you, John. I'm just laughing at Uli in the chat room. Just said that top tip sounded like the rice. So, there we are. Matt, this is your first WWDC, isn't it?
Oh, you're not supposed to tell people that.
Matt, this is your fifth WWDC, isn't it?
It is, in fact, my first. So.
Because of, you keep doing things like having children.
Yeah, my wife gave birth to our fifth last year.
Well, my top tip is to find Matt Long and give him a big hug and welcome him to WWDC.
Great. Last time he said that for WWDC, we received photos of that happening to the person who was talking of which, Mark Hoffman, who is the person I happened to, he's our guest on the show next week.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, great.
There
we are. So there we are. My top tip is buy a ticket. there we are.
Well, yeah.
I will improve that for next week with another one. It's there. Right. Okay. Thank you very much. For coming on. It's been great to have you here, Matt. It's always great to have someone here in the studio. I just wish we could fly John in every single week, but our budget doesn't quite allow that, unfortunately.
Not quite, huh?
All we could do is get someone to shove him in a cupboard, as you can see in San Francisco. But at least they give him time to get dressed this week, which we are very grateful for. So, John, when you get out of the cupboard, or come out of the closet, as we discovered earlier, and you go and write wonderful things, this blog that I will never put in the show notes, and this product that we encourage people to buy, tell people where they can find it all.
You want to go to memoryminer.com to learn all about the product, and you want to go to memoryminer.com/blog to read the blog about my adventures in writing it, and you want to follow me on Twitter as Djembe, D-J-E-M-B-E, like the West African instrument.
Yeah, you didn't give your Twitter address, did you? Pearlmonger.
Yeah, well, it's on in the chat room there. It's the same on Twitter.
There's about 12 people there.
I thought it was
Swing Guru.
We need to tell the 5,000
AWT expert.
Oh gosh.
We need to tell the 5,000 people who choose to miss the live experience.
5,000 at least. I thought it was 5 million.
We're close to 5,000. I think
that's great.
It's sort of it varies a little bit.
Sure,
depends on the guest. So
yeah, right. Yeah, thanks. We'll see.
So it's Okay, I'm Scotty from iDeveloper TV. We've got loads of new video courses coming up. We've been filming lots recently. We've got a QuickTime course about to come out, a unit testing course. The NS Conference videos are on the verge of being released, and of course, very soon,
Core Animation.
Core Animation course with Matt Long. I mean, it's exciting days. You can follow me on Twitter, MacDevNet. Few more followers, please, because I would like the tidal wave of change, the mini fireballing effect, to grow, just for John's benefit, so we can keep sending people to his blog. Did I tell him much of MacDevNet on Twitter in case I didn't do it there? Someone's just arrived in the chat room, said they missed the whole thing. So should we go back to the start?
Sure, yeah. Let's go.
Okay.
Well, wait. Now, who is Akempegen? A Kemp Jen, identify yourself so we can start.
Identify yourself. We have to wait for the pause for the lag because I mean this is being.
His name is Howdy. And my partner in crime, Doody.
Oh, his name is A Kemp Jen. Oh, it's Alex Kemp Jen. Hi, Alex. Okay, Alex,
just for you, we're going to start the entire thing
just
over.
Just for your benefit, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to iDeveloper Live. This week on iDeveloper Live, we have Mr. John Fox in pink and lilac shirt. We have Mr. Matt Long talking about core animation. And Scotty sits there and looks very small because he's laid back in his seat. But really, we all know it's because Matt is a midget stood in front of the camera. There we are. That was iDeveloper Live in 20 seconds. I hope that's helped you, Alex, just to understand what you've just missed. But next week, arrive on time, will you? Thank you. Oh, we're starting more music. We're not even going to do that section. Right, that really is it, folks. We are going to wrap up this show. I think that's enough excitement for one day. I don't think my bladder can hold out anymore. So we are going to...
And you need soup, of course.
Yes. So we are going to say until next time... This is going to be the shortest ever episode if you've only just tuned in. So until next time, it's 1800 GMT plus one, Alex. We will say you take care. Oh, wrong one. That one. Yes. I'm just waiting for the phone call from Hollywood. Oh, it's Russell right. Left my desk now. Oh, more music! Shut up! I must really sort these playlists out in iTunes.
Okay. I'm going to stop recording now because I have to stop laughing.